Scott Maddox here is a manager for product marketing for MediaFuse line of automated content repurposing products at Thompson Grass Valley's Integrated Production Solutions in Jacksonville, Florida. Maddox is responsible for product evolvement from market research to conception and management of the product lifecycle to worldwide customers. His past experience includes various marketing management, sales, and development positions spanning the past 23 years, including 12 years working directly in broadcast television, in control room, robotic camera automation, and internet technology development fields. He's a 1985 graduate of West Virginia University Institute of Technology. His degree is in electrical engineering, power technology. So I'd like to, without further ado, welcome Scott Maddox.
Thank you. Thank you, Keith. Thanks very much. Can everybody hear me? It's very good to be here today. I appreciate you sticking around until the last presentation, and hopefully this will be something of interest to you. Grass Valley, in case you don't know, we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year, and we've been around for a long time, and we always try to emphasize innovation, produce products that perform, have industry-leading performance, and then we all have a passion for our jobs at Grass Valley. Doc Hare here, he's the founder of Grass Valley, and I'm told he used to bring his dog to work every day, so I think he probably had a good time with what he did. This afternoon, I want to talk about, this presentation is probably going to be a little bit different than some of the ones that you've seen. I'm going to talk probably less about technology, although there is some technology in here. We're mainly going to talk about the viewers, which really are the people that, as broadcasters, we have to make an impression on and make an impact on, because these are the people who ultimately consume our product as broadcasters. And I want to talk about how that content consumption is evolving and changing. We have some recent data that talks about some of the things that are happening, where people are getting their content now, and the amount of time they're spending on different screens and that sort of thing. We'll also talk about how we can use technology and new ideas to create new revenue streams to expand our reach to different demographics of people. So rather than the traditional folks who would sit down and watch the news, for example, you know, even though some of those people are still doing that, there's a lot of additional ways that we can consume content today. So what technologies are available to make that work better for the consumer? We'll talk about then implementing what we call a COPE, a Create Once, Publish Everywhere workflow. And that basically is designed around the fact that as broadcasters, we spend quite a bit of resources to go out and produce this local content. And so rather than reinvent the wheel, what can we do? What technologies can we use to take that content and reformat it and use it everywhere, mobile, web, every possible distribution outlet? And then we'll talk about something we call the multimedia journalist. Journalists today are having to wear more hats than they used to, and it's becoming very important, especially for the local broadcaster, to have journalists that are engaged with newer technologies. They don't have to be experts at them, but they have to be aware of these technologies when they're going out and they're producing their content. Keep in mind how it's going to be used and that sort of thing. And then finally, we'll talk about who's going to win the local media eyeball race, because it's really all about the eyeballs. Getting people to watch our content, making sure that we're in the right places where our viewers are. There currently is there's a battle going on for the main screen in the household, and I'm sure everybody here has heard of Hulu. I don't know if you've tried it. It's actually a very nice system, but you can download and watch these network shows now really when they're released, so there's very little lag time. We have TiVo is trying to stream some data. In my household, we have a Wii, and there's quite a bit of information available on that now. Of course, the Apple TV, you can go and you can buy these same TV shows in HD and consume those. Netflix, I just signed up for the Netflix service, and I have a PC that's connected to my television, and I can watch movies on that. And they're not latest release movies, but you know they're good movies for the kids to watch, and so we can watch that. So at the end of the day, we've got all of this competition for this main screen in the household. So as a content producer, you have to figure out ways to make sure that your content is front and center and is available to everybody that they're watching. Nielsen and Ball State recently did a survey that they spent several million dollars on. They took 376 people in various large markets, and they studied them for a total of 972 days. And the intention of that, these were all different demographics, all age groups. The intention of this was to figure out what they're watching, where they're watching it, and when they're watching it, and to kind of gauge that. And there were some unexpected results that came out of that, but they looked at the four screens. The first screen, of course, is our main screen in the living room, which has been the predominant place we've consumed media for a long time. The second screen now is the computer, and all of us are now using computers every day, and we're starting to use those computers not so much for work, but to watch video and consume multimedia content. And then the third screen, which you know, is now our mobile phone. We have mobile phones now that are capable of displaying a great deal of video and multimedia content to us. The fourth screen, which we really don't care about for this discussion, but that includes television you might see in Walmart that's pitching a product or something, the movie theater, and other type screens. So really, for the purpose of our discussion, we're going to focus on these three screens. This chart, I don't want to give you a lot of statistics, but a couple of these are interesting. This chart shows the average time exposed to media across all four screens for different demographics. These are the age groups. We start out with the 18 to 24-year-olds, 25, 35, 45, and go up. One of the things that surprised even the researchers was that the group that is exposed to the most content per day is the 45 to 54-year-old demographic. And I'm actually in that demographic as well. And you know, so I thought about this when I saw these statistics. I started to think, well, how much video content am I exposed to every day? You know, the TV's on in the living room. I've got my phone. I sometimes watch things on there. I've got my computer at work. I've got a computer in the bedroom, and I've got all these things. And it really made me think that, you know, yeah, I can believe that now that's happening. This is the average percentage of time per screen that people spend on the different types of content. The blue is still the first screen. So you can see it still dominates. But everywhere you see orange, that are these other screens starting to impede into the first screen. And you can see that among these age groups, Even the ones in the center here are beginning to consume more and more of their content somewhere other than that main television screen. And of course, the 45 to 65, they still get the majority of their content on that first screen, but theirs is actually changing faster than everybody else's. So in a few years, there's going to be a whole lot more orange here and a whole lot less blue. So what does that mean for us as local broadcasters? Well, it means that this demographic, which is probably as important to us as any other in terms of our local revenue, they watch television like those that are 55 plus, but they use the internet like those that are in a younger demographic. And these folks also consume serious video online. You know, YouTube is not all just cats playing pianos and stuff like that. That's really, you know, meaningless stuff. A lot of politicians are starting to use it now. In an Oregon Senate race, One contestant had 30% of his videos viewed by that demographic. They keep statistics on that. And so, you know, they are beginning to consider these alternative media outlets as serious places to go to consume their content. This group has more buying power for local goods. So as a local broadcaster, it makes sense to us for us to start thinking about what are the non-traditional advertisers that we've never had on television that we can offer the availability of advertising on our multimedia outlets. So we have to start thinking about, okay, the delicatessen in a certain part of town who never advertised on the TV, well, maybe he can afford to advertise now on some of our digital channels or on our website and that sort of thing. And this is an increasingly mobile group. This group is using mobile phones to consume multimedia more and more all of the time. I'm always amazed when I'm on an airplane or something at the number of people who, you know, are, you know, probably grandfathers and grandmothers, and they pull out their iPhone and they're watching things. Their grandkids send videos to them and that sort of thing. So this is happening quickly. It really, the tide of people beginning to consume content in alternate places is really starting to accelerate. Well, what about the younger viewers? These are the viewers now that, as if we have a local news operation for a local broadcaster, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she doesn't watch the local news at all. And there's a number of reasons for that, but one of the reasons is that they don't have the content in the local area that I live that interests her. It's all stories, you know, it's news stories, and I'm interested in news, but she's not interested in that type of news. The impact of that is the national and retail advertisers, they covet this group. These are the people that they really want to sell things to. So, you know, these are people that we're not attracting to our content, and yet these are the people that get the highest CPM rates for advertising and that sort of thing. This is a much more technical group. They use all portals for media. They use everything. They're willing to try any new technology when it comes out almost immediately. This is a very important group for local broadcasters to reach, and it's going to require new ideas and content. It's going to require, I saw a broadcaster in Fort Myers, Florida. They have a special website that is just for high school sports. You go to that site, you can see interviews with coaches, players from all of the area high schools, and I'm told that it is the teenagers that go to this site for the most because they want to see interviews with their friends and their peers and people that are at their school. And what this particular site does is they go out and they sell ads to local businesses in that area that also want to reach this demographic. And of course, we're pulling in national ads that when they see a demographic like this, they're all over it. Another phenomenon that's taken place is something that deals with the primary screen time. And what this means is, if I'm watching TV, am I also doing something else? Am I surfing the web and doing all of these other things? I know my kids, they don't just watch TV. They've got a laptop or they've got something else going on, and I'm actually starting to do that myself. And a majority of consumers are watching more than one screen at a time 28% of the time. So more than a quarter of the time that these folks are watching television, they're doing something else. They're consuming media in some other way. This is how we used to watch TV. You know, we'd all come home and we'd put on our smoking jacket and, you know, sit down with the wife and at 6:30 and watch the news. And this is actually how we do it now. We come home anytime, you know, we get ready to come home and we sit down and we open up the laptop and then we turn on the TV and it's this constant stream of information coming at us. So what does that mean? Well, I think that what that means is local broadcasters, we need to prepare for a very different future for broadcasting. We have to adopt a multi-screen strategy. It is critical that we have a plan in place, and the plan must begin to happen very quickly on getting our content to all of these screens, regardless of where it is. We have to not think about, you know, well, we'll do this screen first, then, you know, we'll wait and see how popular this is. We have to put in technologies that allow us to reach all of these screens as soon as we possibly can. We also have to be mindful of what has happened with radio and the newspapers. And I know there are some radio folks here at this conference, and you know, talk radio is still doing pretty well. But I know that certain radio formats have been challenged, and newspapers were caught off guard by Craigslist. They poo-pooed it. You know, it's like that. We're not worried about that. And the next thing you know, it's completely eroding their revenue. And now these folks are trying to catch up to the internet. But unfortunately, when you lose viewers and you lose readers and those people, it's very difficult then to go back out and recapture those people. By 2011, repurposed content is going to be the absolute norm. I mean, you know, I have a TiVo. I watch very little television live. I use the TiVo for everything. And I've gotten in the habit now that, you know, I don't even check to see what's on. I go to my TiVo guide and I see what's there that I've asked it to record, and that's what I watch. And, you know, now that I have a multimedia PC connected to my TV, we use that a lot. You know, just go on demand. We'll go download something and watch it. One thing I hear a lot when we go out, I'm a product manager for a product called MediaFuse, and that's an automated content repurposing system that is an option to our Ignite control room automation system. So we go out and we try to sell this system to broadcasters, and we hear this a lot. Well, you know, we're not really making much money on our website right now. It's, you know, 2-4% of our revenue or whatever. And this is the kind of the argument. This is a little bit tongue in cheek, but it actually makes a lot of sense. This is something called the Gartner hype cycle, and this is something that it was made to explain the phenomena of technology and what happens through the transition from technology being an idea to being overhyped, to being something that disappoints us, to ultimately becoming the norm and something that we use a lot. There's a technology trigger, and that was, you know, somebody had a bright idea, hey, we can watch video on the internet, you know, that's a great idea. So let's go out and let's create these technologies to do that. Let's start up YouTube and all that. Next thing you know, we're all high-fiving each other, and it's like, this is going to be the next big thing. This is really, you know, this is the future of everything. And of course, you know, there are bandwidth restrictions, the advertising's not catching up. The next thing you know, we're in this trough of disillusionment, and you know, we're all down like, well, you know, maybe this wasn't such a great idea. Well, we're kind of here right now. You know, we've kind of gotten through this. I think that everybody will acknowledge the fact now that internet video and mobile video, it is the real deal. There is a future in this. We're now climbing up this slope of enlightenment, which is that realization. This plateau of productivity, this is where we make the money. We're not yet there. We're getting there. We're close to that, but we're not there yet. But I will tell you that now is the time to start investing in the technology to get you here, because once we reach this point where it is the norm for everyone to expect your content to be wherever they are, once that is the norm for everybody and every demographic, if your content's not there, they're not going to be watching it, and then they're not going to be watching your ads, and then you're going to be, you know, just another channel in the guide. Let's go over a few interesting applications. The ABC News iPhone application is something that I've been hearing quite a bit from the ABC network stations. And the one thing about the iPhone, and most of you probably already know this, but it has a GPS built into it. And the beauty of these kind of products is its ability to determine your location and then serve you locally based advertising depending on where you are. And I don't have an iPhone, I've got a BlackBerry, but I routinely use Google Maps on my BlackBerry to find restaurants that are close to where I am. And a year or so ago when I first tried that, it really didn't work very well. I mean, it would show me something that had closed down or something like that. I tried it again last week. I was down in Melbourne, Florida, and I was looking for a restaurant, and I tried it there. And lo and behold, it gave me a whole list, and I drove to two or three of them, and they were actually there. So this type of thing is getting much better. The idea of these kind of applications is to take that knowledge of where you are at any given time Look at the content that you're choosing to view. So, you know, if I'm interested in, you know, how the U.S. soccer team did in their game last night, and I choose to watch that type of a clip, then they know where I am and they know what my interests are. So that's two very key elements to identifying what I might be interested in, and now we can serve that advertising. And these also give you the capability to do advanced breaking news. New York and San Francisco are going to begin using this for civil alerts and things like that. You know, there's a number of options with all phones. The gentleman from Harris was talking about ATSC, and I know that that's a big technology. I do kind of have a funny story about that. My daughter has one of these little Samsung Voyager telephones that I got her that she mainly uses to text message, but she does have internet access on it. We'd had the thing about 6 months, and she's looking at it, and she pulls out the antenna that comes out the bottom. And she comes running to me and says, I think I broke my phone. What is this thing sticking out the bottom? And I looked at it, and it actually took me a minute, you know, to think, oh, that's mobile TV, you know. And the only reason I say that is there is a gap of information for, you know, I explained to her what that was, you know, exactly what it was. And her question was, well, you know, I don't really care where it comes from. I just want to watch the content. And so, you know, it's an important factor to think as a broadcaster. You have to make sure that you're taking care of all of these different outlets for your content, but you have to make sure that you have all of the contents covered. You can't just put all of your hopes onto that one thing. So as part of your mobile strategy, you have to be thinking of other things besides just the ATSC stuff and the DVB-H. KPHO, they are a Meredith station, and they actually develop their own iPhone app. So most Meredith stations, you go to their website, and they advertise the iPhone app. And these are things that we can do as broadcasters. It's not that big of a deal to develop your own app and get it on there, or you can pay, you know, some kid to do it, and it probably wouldn't cost you very much. Slideshows are a very popular thing now. A lot of broadcast sites don't use them because they are rather time-consuming to put together. But this is a screen capture from WFTV in Orlando, one of our MediaFuse users. And these basically, what they do is you take a video story that's a few minutes long and you grab stills out of that and then you write a caption for it. So you end up with about 12 to 15 stills for a two-minute video. So, you know, these are good. I actually use these a lot because I'll be sitting in the office and, you know, rather than watching a video and my boss comes by and, you know, thinks I'm watch videos all day, I can actually consume that video content very quickly by doing this, and I get the gist of the story. The important thing is that for WFTV and their player, they use IB, Internet Broadcast, who actually provides the player for this. You can serve two banner ads for each slide. So on a 12-slide representation of that story, I just served out 24 banner ads. And, you know, that is more valuable than just simply serving out a couple of video, a couple of banner ads, or sometimes maybe even then a pre-roll. This is a very popular on WFTV's website. They sometimes get over 400,000 hits a day on some of their slideshows. If it's a story that has national appeal, they'll get a lot of activity on that. So they actually make a good deal of money on this. And then there's Twitter. I don't know, how many people use Twitter? Can I, just out of my curiosity. So we have a few people. Twitter, you know, I actually use Twitter more and more. And I mentioned the U.S. soccer team, and I'm a pretty big soccer fan. And when they had their game against Honduras last week, it wasn't shown on TV here, and it didn't really matter because I was traveling, and I wouldn't have been able to get to a TV anyway. So I subscribed to the U.S. Soccer Twitter feed, and they were doing updates. So about every 2 or 3 minutes, they would do a Twitter update on what was happening in the game, and I find that very useful. There's a lot of broadcasters now that use Twitter, there's a good site called tvontwitter.com. And you go in, you put in your state. I went in and put in Wisconsin and pulled up everybody using Twitter. Twitter is actually very good for breaking news. And one uh, It's been embraced by about 26% of U.S. TV stations, so some use it a lot more than others. It also addresses a complaint of the iPhone application, which is the ability to push breaking news alerts. It's very difficult to do that to the iPhone, but if you use Twitter to do that, then it makes a lot more sense. So this is a rundown of all the Wisconsin TV stations on Twitter. I think there may be a few more, but I kind of went through and compiled this data because it's interesting to look at the relationship of followers to Twitter versus the total number of, they call them tweets. You know, I used the wrong word. I said Twitters one day to somebody and some web expert guy, and he said, no, it's not a Twitter, it's a tweet, you know, so you have to use the right terminology. So the tweets, you know, the leading station here is WITI in Milwaukee, and they have about 5,200 followers, and they've done about 22,000 tweets. That's a lot. That's a whole lot of information to be sending out. If you look down, you'll see that, but they have the most followers. So there is a correlation between the amount of late-breaking alerts that you send out and the number of followers that you can get. You know, this doesn't sound like a whole lot of people, but that is 5,200 people today that this television station is pushing information to every single day. It's a branding thing. You know, my WITI, they have 5,200 serious people in the community that they push content to every single day. I checked this today. These statistics are from about 4 days ago. This number was already up about 50. So they're increasing that number, you know, 10 a day or so. So in a couple of years, these guys are going to be serving tens of thousands of people this way. So if you're not using Twitter yet, I would encourage you to do that. TV widgets, I heard somebody mention that earlier, and LG and Samsung are releasing these TVs that tie into the internet to allow you to put these widgets on there. And this gets back to the primary screen time. We're doing lots of different things while we're watching TV. And one of those things could be looking at your local news alerts because you can develop these widgets for yourself. And if you go to connectedtv.yahoo.com/developer, you'll be able to download a developer's kit where you can write your own widget. And, you know, there aren't a lot of these sets out there right now, but in a couple of years, almost every set that you buy is going to have this technology. And it's a very good way for you to, once again, extend your local branding out to people that are consuming maybe content that's somewhere else. You know, they're watching, you know, for whatever reason, they're watching your competitors' news, and they see something on your widget here, and they change the channel. You know, it's good to be able to do these things. So really, I have, you know, some questions for broadcasters. Is your content available where consumers are watching? Are you getting to all of these screens? Because if you're not, you need to start thinking about that. Is your content available when consumers are watching? We're time shifting everything now, so you've really got to be there when everybody wants to view the content. And the other question is, of course, is it economically viable for you to reach all of those screens? The way most content repurposing is done today is a very manual, intensive process that uses a lot of editing and usually have some very technically capable people there who know Photoshop and NewsCutter and all these different tools. And then they have to understand these online systems where you put your content up. And it would be expensive to go out and hire more of those people. So the other question is, how much content should you repurpose? There's a debate going on right now. I have one customer that keeps telling me, you know, we don't really want to repurpose all of our content. We just want to put a few really good stories out there. And, you know, I think as a broadcaster, you guys are proud of the quality of content that you put out there. So, you know, the quality of the story, I wouldn't be concerned about. But what does quality mean? I mean, quality means full metadata. So do you have a full complement of metadata with the content that allows it to be found and have, you know, additional slideshows, meaningful thumbnails that actually represent what it is, and have you typed an accompaniment textual story to that. That is the quality aspect. As far as, you know, whether you emphasize quality or quantity, you've got to emphasize quantity. And I make this argument quite a bit. What if YouTube only had 50 videos on there, but they were really good quality videos? They wouldn't get the traffic, because the whole premise of internet distribution is to have something for everybody. And for your website, the more something you have for the more everybody's, the more repeat visits you're going to get from those folks every day. And that's what you're after. It's not really about just getting, you know, one person to come to your site every month and download a story and look at it. You want that one person to come back every single day and get in the habit of doing that. And if you don't have enough content there, then you can't make that happen. So really, with the right tools, you can do both. You can do quantity and you can do quality. You're producing quality content already, so just put more of it out there. So how do we economically push out a higher quantity of and better quality content? Well, that's where we get to implementing this Create Once, Publish Everywhere architecture. And really what COPE is, it is a collection of technologies that provide simple, easy-to-use tools that work across the entire production workflow. In pre-production, our journalists and producers should be able to add metadata and make decisions on how that content's going to be repurposed right in the pre-production phase. Our director and our automation equipment needs to have a hand in chopping up the content to get it ready to repurpose. Our web and/or news department should have tools that allow them to do a very quick post-production process on the content so that we can distribute it out there. And then finally, on the deployment side of things, it's a very manual process now for most people. There's no reason that should be manual. That should be completely automated. If we know all of this information up front, we just go ahead and push it out there right away. It's news content that is the most important in most cases, and it's not news if it takes 3 or 4 hours to get out there. So get it out there immediately, and you do that by automating some or all of these processes. Just to talk a little bit about metadata and the type of metadata that's important. Metadata really describes the format of the content, any associated content with it, description, a script, a textual story, how we categorize it. We may, in the future, we're moving toward the ability to do a zoom on content so that on the little phone with the square screen, we can zoom in on the football game and you can actually see what's happening rather than this wide angle that doesn't give you much detail. So the types of metadata, there's static metadata, and that's all of these things which typically need to be entered. Some of that's entered manually and some of it's automatically generated. The temporal metadata, we call it, that's a lot of the stuff that the newsroom wants control of, like the script text, the accompaniment text story, closed caption information, and that sort of thing. And then there's distribution metadata, which determines where it actually goes. Where's that metadata come from? Well, the static metadata, normally that comes from the newsroom. The temporal metadata, that can come from everywhere. The newsroom, production personnel, the web personnel, and then some of it needs to be automatically generated. Distribution metadata, that's normally the domain of the web department. So you may say, well, you know, these people don't talk to each other. You know, my facility, I've got, you know, the web people are over here, the newsroom's over here, and they don't really intermingle that much. I think that you're seeing less and less of that, because I think we all understand now that we have to pull together and do a better job with the content. But what COPE does is it provides these common tools and technologies. The news department's using a tool that's very similar to the tool that the web department's using. And so, you know, regardless of how technical you are, you should have the ability to do these things. COPE requires multimedia thinking. So when we go out and acquire content, we need to be thinking about where that content's going to be used. As a journalist, I want to make sure that it's going to be relevant and make sense on the internet or on a mobile device, just as it would be coming over the main screen. And then as we ingest it, we need to go ahead and do some repurposing at that point. And the journalists in the newsroom and the production personnel should be able to handle that part of it. When we mark up the rundown for our over-the-air broadcast, we should be able to go in there and add metadata and make decisions at that point. And then we can end up with a situation where we repurpose two clips for every story. One is the story as it played over the air, the 20-second segment or whatever it is. This other one is our raw video. We go out and shoot a 20-minute interview with the local football coach. We come back, we use 20 seconds of that. What happens to the other 19 minutes of that clip? The journalist, the person who shot that, should be able to come back and drag that file-based content into the repurposing system and have it just spit it out. They shouldn't have to get anybody else involved if they're following the rules that were set up by the web department. So with this thinking, we can end up with two clips that are of the same type of content, but it's two very different users that are going to be attracted to this. From an advertising point of view, we can serve different ads to these two different groups of people, and we can make more money. The CPM on this ad's probably more than the CPM on this ad. Formats, wrappers, which ones do you use? You know, we've got all of these formats that you have to be mindful of, and there will probably be more coming that we don't know about. Just make sure that your system supports them all. Don't get yourself locked into any particular any system that limits your ability to transcode into different formats. One process, multiple outputs, that's what we're looking for. So, you know, winding down the presentation here, the race for eyeballs, who's going to win? Well, a lot of this is, you know, my opinion, but I think that in the next few years, the three screen argument, that's going to be irrelevant. Viewers are not even going to think about that. When they're in the house, they're going to be either watching the main TV or they're going to be watching their netbook in the bedroom or whatever. When they get in their car, they're going to have their phone with them. When they get to work, they're going to have their computer there. Kids are going to have computers in schools and all over the place. It's not going to matter. They're just going to expect your content to be in all of these places. And, you know, nobody's going to care about three screens. You're just going to care about the content. Produce it once. Make sure that it efficiently goes to all of these places. And, you know, most markets are going to see further consolidation. It's a little bit depressing to think about it, but you have to ask the question, you know, can every market sustain 4, 5, or 6 local news operations? We're probably going to have a certain amount of consolidation, and, you know, the newspapers are going to be involved in that because these guys are hurting. The only future that they have is on the web. So, you know, they're putting a lot of resources into the web. As a local broadcaster, you've got to make sure that you're one of those 2 or 3 that this whittles down to in a few years. It's very important to make sure that you're positioned technically to be able to handle that when it gets there. I didn't want to make this a sales pitch for our products. I really just wanted to present the challenges. And I've only got 2 slides that are the sales pitch, but Ignite and MediaFuse are the products that we sell. And these two products actually meet the challenges and solve a lot of the problems that I talked about today. Ignite automates the control room, allows you to make your production much more efficient. We're in about 120 stations from all market sizes. We have scalable systems that go all the way up. MediaFuse is an option for Ignite, and what that does is it completely automates the content repurposing process. So you create your content once, Ignite takes it to air, MediaFuse chops it up, streams it, automates the whole process of getting it out to the internet or to mobile or anything else. With these two products, you can build a high-def automated control environment. You can implement these common tools that are both for pre-production, production, post-production, and the web department. All of these tools can be common now, and people can be using the same platform, and it's a platform that's very easy to use. And you can repurpose all this content with the same staff you have today. You don't need to go out and add all of these people to your staff. That would make the revenue model really not work out for you. And at the end of the day, it allows everybody in the operation to become a multimedia producer or journalist. And that's really where we need to get to, is that everybody in the operation is thinking about the content, not just going over the air, but going to all of these different places as well. And once you've reached that point where it's just happening and it's automated, then you know the viewer's gonna have access to your content no matter where they are. So I certainly appreciate your time, and I'll be glad to entertain any questions that you have. Feel free to send me an email if you have questions or want more information. Thank you very much. Thank you.